Welcome to the City Life Podcast. This podcast is here as a resource to journey together, connecting where you can, whenever you can, in your everyday. Enjoy listening. Be encouraged to share, be inspired, and be blessed as you do so.
Hi, welcome to the City Life Podcast. I am joined today by Rosie and Jez, who I'm really just blessed to be able to come and talk to. And I particularly wanted to, well, this month we're talking about Jesus-centered living around our work. And I know that both of these guys have been really passionate about bringing Jesus into their workplace. And so I just wanted to come and just chat with them and maybe glean a bit of wisdom from you guys. So welcome.
Thank you.
Just really, yeah, blessed to have you here. So first of all, I don't know really how to start my questioning other than to say I know you're passionate about your workplace and passionate about how your life as Christians is lived out in those places. And for all of us, I think, at City Life, we just spend, whether we're employed in a workplace or not, we spend such a lot of our time thinking about work and being at work, and you know, our minds are in our work and we're passionate about our work. Some of us maybe not, I don't know, but
I feel like together, Jez and I, as a couple, as a family with our children, and as individuals, it feels like we are on a bit of a journey of transformation in how we approach work, and I think that started maybe 3 or 4 years ago for both of us, would you say, Jez? And it started with reviewing where work sits in life. So almost reviewing our whole life. So we went through this exercise where we looked at everything we do, all our commitments and all our responsibilities and all our activities in life. And it was quite overwhelming when you look at the number of different organisations we relate to, so church and things children are involved in, things in the community, schools and workplaces, and you sort of think, how on earth do we juggle all of this, and how do we make sense of this, and how do we give things their rightful priority? And we came across this way of looking at life, which we found really helpful, and which we come back to repeatedly, and that is just to view life as having four domains, and everything fits into one of those domains. And they are overlapping, so it's not hard edges between them. But those domains are work and rest and relationships and prayer. And prayer, all of those in the broadest sense of the word. And when we looked at life like that, I realised that a lot of my energy and time and focus was on my work and on my relationships, with very little empty time or rest time. Or time focused on prayer. And I also realised that in order to, it needed to reset the balance. And in order to reset the balance, we agreed together that we were going to subtract some of our focus, some of our time, from some of the, in order to allow rest and prayer to have a greater emphasis. And that was quite a faith step, because we still want to maintain relationships, and we're really passionate about our workplaces and want to pour our hearts into them as well. And yet taking those, so embedding practices, so almost looking at the aspects of life that are outside work, so embedding practices of rest and practices of prayer in terms of times and spaces set apart for those, has actually transformed our work and our relationships, and or is transforming. So I feel we're in a really different place now to where we were 4 years ago. Mm. If you were to take a snapshot of where we are now, would you say we look like transformed people? I think we look like really flawed people, but it's the direction of travel, isn't it? And we sort of know that those are the things, that holds the key. Finding balance between those four domains actually gives us keys which enable everything to have their rightful place and their rightful priority and their rightful focus.
I think that for us, and certainly for me, that the act of not doing everything or not striving and building in rest to work is a faith step. Mm. And it's a way of bringing God into the workplace, is saying that I'm not in the driving seat. I'm not responsible for everything here. Mm. I'm not the one that's going to bring the big change. It's God that's going to do that.
Mm.
And so by not trying to cover off everything, I'm trying to bring space and allow God to do that. And actually saying that, of course, God is the change maker here. Mm. And so almost not trying to do it all, or constantly trying not to strive, allows God to lead, rather than me.
And that is really just sounds like, from what you're saying, is one big act of submission in everything. And that's obviously very, very hard, but it sounds like what you guys have done is, when you talk about practices, building in these practices that actually allow you to do that, because sometimes I think we run so fast with the to-do list that actually even practicing that submission, that letting go, that allowing God to be who he is and do his thing, just gets put lower down the to-do list. So I suppose then, can you talk about some of the things or some of the sort of keys that you have been given?
Well, I suppose one practical one for us has been putting regular Sabbath into place.
Yeah.
And by partly giving ourselves permission to not work in terms of paid work and housework, and that's been an effort. It doesn't feel as if it's come at all naturally. But that practice has enabled us to, enabled moments of, allowed us to process a little bit more, allowed us to, allowed us to rest a bit, and brought a bit more creativity into problems which feel too difficult.
Yeah.
Rest is a place. So the thing about rest is it's the place where you grow. Mm. So actually, when an athlete exercises, that stretches their muscles, but it's in the rest that their muscles get stronger, is my understanding.
No, I think I've heard that.
And we grow at night, and I feel like we grow in character in our rest. So my workplace and my relationships can stretch me, but what I do with that and the growth that comes out of that, I think happens in the rest times and the prayer times, because it happens when I'm processing, digesting, listening. That's where I grow self-awareness, and that's where I can hear God speak into the difficult emotions or the difficulties. So there's growth there. Mm. And the other thing is that one aspect of rest is play. So when you are not thinking, I should maybe do that job or this job, I'm not a producing. So I think of Sabbath as not producing, acquiring or achieving, which is really challenging for people we're both doctors in our line of work. That's a really challenging thing to let go of. And in our culture, And yet, because we're not feeling any pressure to do any of those things on that day that we give ourselves, we're much more likely to play with our kids and play as a family in ways that are really fun. And then what happens, the impact of that is it does bring creativity. So it brings, we often get our creative ideas, don't we, when we're not expecting them. And so rest just generates more creative ideas, but also it brings a restfulness into our workplaces. So my ability to free up my colleagues to take breaks on a busy shift is much better since I've been practicing Sabbath, because I feel much less a slave to the workload.
Yeah.
And the challenges in the NHS is that the work never ends, and our resources are below. We have fewer resources than there is need, and our capacity is always overstretched. And that, so every shift that I work is, it's got that dynamic to it from start to finish. Meaning it would be, it's really easy to not take breaks, and it's very difficult to take breaks. Yeah. But actually, taking regular Sabbath means that restfulness comes in.
I think just as we've been saying that Sabbath and resting is a bit of a faith step, I've increasingly feel as if the workplace is a faith step, is a place of going with God into in faith. I'm stepping out of my comfort zone and I've often come back to that reminder that we partner with God in the things that we're doing, and that, you know, that image of being yoked with God, that God's doing the heavy lifting, he's giving the direction. I can start relaxing, and relaxing when I remember that God is leading here.
Yeah.
And that I can be confident in the place I am because I'm with him. But also that I can partner with other people, I'm reminded of Gideon, you know, where Gideon was given 300 mighty men next to him, and Moses was given Aaron to speak and to be with him, and that God provides those really important partnerships around me, around us, in work, which is encouraging, and it's there's an encouragement I'm not doing these things on my own, but actually that's something that I do it with God, and he puts people alongside.
Yeah, that's really good. How do you go into work and know that God is absolutely with you? Is it because you've been able to look back and say, I recognise that God's been with me? Or does it always feel like an easy, I know that God is with me, so I'm just going to go and follow and...
I think it comes back to practices again.
Okay.
So we talked about practices of rest.
Yeah.
I remember reading that verse repeatedly and not really knowing what it meant when it says, stand at the crossroads and ask, where are the ancient ways? Mm-hmm. And I feel like what we're describing is a discovery of some ancient ways. So the other practice that we're embedding, because when you practice doing something, it becomes a habit, and then it becomes almost a routine behaviour. So that's what I'm saying. If we practice rest, it becomes something we can do. And then the other domain for us that was or tended to be pushed out. Jez is much better at routine than me. So he's always had a regular God time every morning ever since I've known him. And I've been more haphazard. But the practice that we are both taking on is putting in prayer in. And it's not because we don't do hours of interceding, that sort of thing. But what I found that I can do, despite not being a very routine person and being someone that flexes with the needs, is put in night prayers. And I'm starting with night prayers because one of the ancient ways is that the Jewish day would start in the evening, and I found that my working day starts the night before.
Right, okay.
So we've changed Sabbath so it starts the night before, and if we start it properly in the evening, we wake up into it better in the morning.
Yeah.
And if I start my working day the night before,
mm.
it changes how I go into it the next day, and I sleep better as well.
Yeah.
So night prayers for me is, and I have to say, it's a battle for me to make myself do it every day, a bit like when a child's trying to brush their teeth, isn't it? So I'm on a bit of a journey to get there, but I know it helps me when I do. So night prayers is gratitude. So it's thanking for what's gone through in the day, as well as recognising the bits that felt quite tricky and asking God to speak into them, and then looking ahead to the next day. It's like it's examine is the it's sort of loosely based on examine, that practice. But and then it's looking ahead to the next day and thinking what's coming ahead tomorrow and how am I feeling about it. And I often find I get a little key for the next day that drops into my head, and it might be start with this. If it's a sort of unscheduled day with lots that needs to happen in it, or I might get a take this principle into the day. And then in the morning when I wake up, I remember, you know, I've written down what those thoughts were the night before, and I'm just going into it. On days when we're going to work, we join the 6 o'clock prayer in the morning with on Zoom with people from City Life, which is amazing and a sort of community in itself. So that might be two or three times. It's not, I don't get on it every day, but it's brilliant. So invite anyone to join us in that. And it's a strictly 15 minutes boundary time. And we pause, we give thanks, we ask for things, and we yield into our day. And I do a similar thing from on my own. And then when I can, I feel like God's inviting me into lunchtime and tea time prayers, which might just be an awareness of his presence, or it might just be a turning my mind and my heart to him, or it might be taking a little time out. And those prayer times, they tend to be just a bit freer in terms of I tend to just read the Bible and reflect on something and have a bit of, or remember a verse, or just remember something he said. And it feels like when we practice those four times a day prayer rhythms, actually we hear God speak into our day and into each other's day and into other people's day more. And when do you want to add into that, Jez?
I think those times have been really important. It's funny how it's prayer that provides the link with people I'd rub shoulders with at work somehow as well, because I find that people will share or tell me about something that they're struggling with, and that it's saying to them that I tend to pray in dealing with that kind of situation. I'd like to pray about this. Do you mind? And that. That seems to be happening quite a lot, and it's been an encouragement at times to then, in speaking to them again, in them knowing that I'm praying, and partly just to ways of letting people know that I have faith in something outside of myself, and that I follow God. I found that I've been wanting to spend more time, or just instead of praying, just being silent in front of God, and just not almost having a gendered prayer, but just being silent and allowing the things that are on my mind to be in front of God, and and being silent in his presence. And that I find, I feel almost drawn to do that at times. And I find it has been, I just enjoyed it more than, say, a gendered prayer.
Mm.
I heard that someone said that the soul is like a wild animal and it's quite shy, and you need to give it space and to sort of emerge from the undergrowth. And I think that's what I relate to in silent times. And I will often my commute to work is about an hour, and quite a few of those drives or drive in silence to let my soul free. Almost, and I may or may not hear from God specifically or know what I'm saying, but I know that I've spent time. And it is interesting how we're here to talk about work, and yet what we're focusing on is the in-between moments. And I feel like, you know, if you look at creation, God created, when he created the day, he created the night and then the day. Yeah. And it's the bits, so we think about our production and our achievement, and that's what work is.
Mm.
And yet when it's a God-led journey, it seems that he starts with the empty spaces and the between spaces. Mm. So the other aspect of prayer, of practical prayer at work for me, is car journeys, and also there are hospitals have long corridors. So it's the only time of day when no one can talk to me usually, because a discipline I have is to keep my phone in my pocket, and you know, I have a bleeper, but I can't answer the bleep till I reach another phone. So that is a moment in a corridor, and there are these moments every day or a staircase when my soul can be freed and listen again.
Yeah. So you guys have both touched on it a little bit. I want to talk about people, because whether we are full-time parents or whether we're caring for people, whatever our work is, people are, we have to interact with people. We have to, I guess for you guys, maybe patients, but and colleagues, I suppose, there are other people, and they come with a lot of their own stuff, and sometimes you're managing them, sometimes they're managing you. You know, there's all these different people dynamics, and I guess I just have a question about how you, this sort of, these practices that you describe about prayer and you know, all of that has to interact with your interactions and the people that you meet and the people that you spend time with and see. And how do you manage your, I don't know if people can relate to this, but it feels like a bit of a life of interruption.
So I'm glad you used the word interruption, because Jesus got interrupted a lot. And one of the rhythms that, so there are four rhythms at church, aren't there? Invite, serve, grow and worship. And we've talked about growing, and we've talked about worship and our work as an act of worship. But for me, invitation is a really broad play. I think that invite, to me, I think God invites us into lots of things. But hospitality, to me, is we love having people to our home, and we love visiting other people, and we love sort of hosting each other. But there's more to hospitality for me, or more to inviting. Mm. And in the workplace, that looks like choosing to be present. So in a overstretched workplace full of interruptions, the solution is for people to hide it from them. So, for example, if I'm holding the emergency bleep, I will tend to situate myself in the place where people are, where the lots of bleeps are coming from, so that I'm visible, so that my position is saying I am expecting and welcoming interruptions. And I think I think that really shows.
Mm.
And the other thing is to be present. So it is, we are a profession of multitaskers, and actually that is when you make mistakes, to be honest. But things like being on a telephone and being fully present and not writing at the same time, or when someone comes to speak to me, giving either saying to them, I just need to finish this and then I will give my full attention, or giving giving my full attention and being present, is, for me, those are really important practices. And the other aspect of inviting for me is inviting the difficult conversations. So inviting feedback. And when you are working in a really stretched setting, relationally, it's going to be challenging. We are under stress. Mm. We are working tired and hungry and stretched. And that is going to make us, you know, I have to apologise frequently for being sharp in my response. But actually inviting those conversations and asking the questions and being curious and having the sort of courage to receive feedback and to listen to people. I think is really key. And I think the next season for me, I would love to learn coaching skills, because I think in so many settings of life, learning how to be curious and ask is something that empowers solutions and doesn't just fix situations, but actually empowers solutions. So this is touching on the drama triangle, and the drama triangle is an upside down triangle, and at the bottom, and we all find ourselves playing the different roles in this triangle, and I see it playing out in myself and around me at work, because we're in a sort of we're in a scenario which promotes drama, almost, drama being a kind of negative energy. So at the bottom of the triangle is the victim, who feels helpless and hopeless and done to. And then you've got a perpetrator, who tends to be quite critical, quite blamey, or the cause of the victim's hopelessness or helplessness. And it could be a system. So we love to blame IT, or we love to blame the leaders, or we love to blame the junior colleague, or the this person or that person. And then we have the rescuer, which is trying to solve the outcomes, trying to fix, trying to make suggestions. And how do we get out of that triangle? And someone's written a book called The Empowerment Dynamic. I'm not sure if you can get it in the UK, but there is a website about it where they've redrawn the triangle the right way up. So instead of being a victim who's helpless and hopeless, you're a creator or an activator. And all you have to do is identify a step. And so that's something that when I feel hopeless and helpless in a situation, either in the way the relationship's playing out or in a work scenario or at home, then actually I'm thinking, what can I do? What is the step I can take? What's the next step? One step at a time. And then instead of trying to rescue or fix or suggest a solution, it's being a coach. So it's asking the questions, it's being curious, and it's empowering other people to identify their own steps. And so we practice it at home with our children. and I'm still trying to sort of embed that into my work, because people are looking at me wanting me to fix. And there's a time just to act, and there's a time to stop and ask the questions, which empowers someone else to act, which means next time they can get on with it themselves. So it's the asking, not telling, and it's a real balance. And then the other thing that is happening for me at the minute is whenever I criticize, whenever I blame, I feel, or whenever that feel those thoughts come in, I just get this catch, because I'm realizing that's just perpetrating drama here. And actually, whilst those might seem quite factual criticisms, actually, what's the deeper truth? So instead of being a perpetrator, be a challenger. So a challenger speaks truth. So truth has got an element of prophetic to it. So the fact might be that something didn't go well, or someone did something that wasn't great. The truth might be that something, there's a deeper truth to that. That actually is, what is God saying in this situation? So the challenger inspires vision and does challenge behaviour, but in a way that speaks truth, and truth is always got to be encouraging and empowering and inspiring. So I actually reflect on those three, the positive dynamics every evening, and think, in that scenario from today, where could I have changed? You know, where so that's a work in progress, but I know that God's on my case about bringing those dynamics.
I mean, it sounds incredible, and I love the idea of flipping this drama, because I think a lot of, well, probably all of us encounter that in our workplaces at time to time, from time to time, sorry. But actually, in flipping it on its head and empowering others and using this empowerment model, it feels like probably it takes an awful lot of self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that it will potentially could take like a week for me to process a thing like that and say, oh, actually, I could have done that differently, or how could I have dealt with that?
So that comes back round to our Sabbath. So we started doing Sabbath, as in subtracting work and production, maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And I, during lockdown, when my Sabbaths were no longer sociable, I felt really grumpy on those Sabbaths. For a lot of them, and a lot more fulfilled on my busy days. So, you know, I'd be in the category of, actually, for me, rest is very busy and active and fun. And I would counter that even those of us who are like that need rest, because that grumpiness, beneath that grumpiness, there were some things I needed to process. Right. So I think the practice of engaging with my difficult feelings on my Sabbath days has made it become more habitual to notice them in my regular, particularly evening or lunchtime or tea time prayer times. And when you recognize, when you're practicing that frequently, it becomes much more habitual, or in my car journey. So when I've had a really difficult shift, I'm more likely to drive home in silence, because there's a bit of processing to be done. And it sounds very introspective, but if it's God-focused, God always turns you out. So you might have to look in, but in order to look out.
Right, okay.
So, and I think this sort of links to themes about anxiety. So my therapist friend would tell me, people who are really anxious catch the out breath. So they take a big breath in, and then they breathe in again before they've let the whole breath out.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm doing it now. Okay.
And actually, some of the common respiratory conditions that I look after, they're about the out breath not being able to get out. So it's asthma and smoking related lung disease, emphysema, there's an obstruction to letting your breath out of your lungs.
Yeah.
So your exhale is as important as your inhale. So if you think about our rhythms of life, if inhaling is all the life-giving things, so it's all the busy things and all the active things that we naturally love, if we never exhale, there's a bit of that causes a sort of agitation. It's a horrible feeling when your breathing's obstructed, and whether that's obstructed by extreme anxiety, or whether it's obstructed by airways disease, it's a horrible feeling. And actually, we need to have that long exhale.
Yeah.
So I think practicing those sorts of looking in, looking out, looking in, looking out, always with an upward focus and listening to God, but in as well as out, then I think that is just a journey towards more healthiness.
Right, okay.
So I think it is practices over time which has made me more aware in the moment.
Okay. So what about when it comes, you said you've been practicing at home with your kids,
mm-hmm.
And I'm aware obviously that there are lots of us in those situations, whether we're working some of the time and at home some of the time, whether we're at home all the time. Yet how do you practice it with your kids? And on, I suppose my, this sounds really awful, but my part is when we interact with maybe difficult people, and I don't mean that my children are difficult at all, that's not what I'm saying, but I'm saying that whatever work we do, we encounter people that aren't happy with us or that we find challenging. And this is maybe where I'm just in the drama triangle, but my emotions far more often than I would like to admit just totally get the better of me. And is that an exhale thing that maybe I just need to start practicing the exhale and the pause and the rest a little bit more than I currently am?
Yeah, I mean, if you were to ask my family, I mean, you know, we've rowed today, and actually on Friday evening I had quite a difficult interaction, and I wrote what would I do differently next time, and I realised that it's when I respond before I've paused. So our sympathetic nervous system is the one that triggers when we are under threat, either emotionally or actually. And when that triggers, that's our fight, flight or freeze. So we either run away, we fight back, or you freeze. So when you're in that scenario, when you're sort of very highly triggered, or when someone else you're with is highly triggered in that way, nobody can respond healthily. So the only way to be able to get into a healthy response and then ask those lovely questions which unlock the next step forward, which I'm really bad at doing and I'm desperate to learn, but I know what I need to do, I just need to get into doing it. But the way to do it is to get ourselves into our parasympathetic. So the parasympathetic nervous system are the hormones that go round when we're happy and relaxed, and they let us digest our food and maybe even, I think, digest our thoughts. And it's in that, and that's why we're creative when we rest, because that's when our brain makes connections across all its different parts. So when I have a triggering child in front of me, something that I have done in the past and has worked, but you've reminded me I should try it again, is one time when they just can't hear you. One time we tried out getting one of them to just breathe and just focus on breathing and taking a long exhale, and it just calmed them down in order for them to be able to just pause and process, and then we could have a conversation.
Yeah.
And so what I know I need to learn is to, at work and at home, in those times when you feel like there is no time to pause, I need to step out and pause. I need a bit of recognition in the moment to step out and pause, so that my response comes from restfulness again.
The only thing that has come to mind to me is has come out of Pete Gregg's pilgrimage. So he went on this pilgrimage a little while ago, didn't he? And he documented it as he went along, and he put it onto Lectio 365, is it called? And I think there's something about working, just as there is in other aspects of our lives, is that God is on the journey with us, and it is a pilgrimage in itself. The work is a bit of a pilgrimage. It's a journey that God is on with us. And I quite like the prayer that's the pilgrim's prayer that I quite often say as I go to work, which is, I am not in control. I am not in a hurry. I greet everyone. No, I walk in faith and hope. I greet everyone with peace. And I bring back only what God gives me.
Wow.
And so there's something quite releasing in that, is that I'm in a journey with God in this. I have not got it sorted out, but God is in it with me. And that's an exciting place to be, is that I'm alongside God in it.
Yeah.
And probably the last thing for me is actually just to give a shout out to the prophetic community. A couple of times we've made prophetic appointments and I've written down what has been said in that. And that's I found really helpful when things get more difficult and I feel as if I'm losing my way or I'm overwhelmed, is to come back to the words that God has said to me to hold on to.
Yeah.
And that's a faith step. But holding on to the things God has said to me feels important to do at times where it doesn't feel straightforward.
Yeah.
So we found, I want to thank the folk that gave prophetic words and the prophetic community. And actually going back to that from time to time, not just a one-off, but actually at seasons of change or transition, and then writing it down and coming back to it, I find really helpful.
Okay. Thank you, guys. It's been just so lovely to talk to you. Thank you for sharing your home with me for an evening. I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Bye.